contacted by Phoenix representatives, asking us to join the Klan. It was an attractive offer, of course, but we made a firm decision to wait for you. We weren't that keen on ditching anyone. Today I had a visit from Anastaria, the leader of the Phoenix Klan herself. She asked about malachite mining, the items we were given, and the place that we had taken. I don't consider any of this a secret, and gave her honest answers to all of this, about the fifth place and what each of us got. She showed a lot of interest in you, in the rings, and in how you changed their stats. This I also told her, although now I think that perhaps I shouldn't have. So, in general, know that the Phoenix people were asking about you. We'll be waiting for you at the Jolly Noom in just over 2 months. We cannot come to join you. PKers have become a real pain. As soon as you leave the city, they pop up right away. If you can, please send us the money that we got from the dungeon. We're running a bit low at the moment. Eric. Once I leave Beatwick, the drinks are on me. So what if you can't get drunk in Bar Leona? The drinks are still on me. Eric and the guys didn't ditch me after all. And I was all set to get upset. Now, what do we have in the third letter?
Hello, Mayen. Sending you the lapis lazuli. I hope that you're able to work it by now. 50 pieces of lapis should last you a good while. Anastaria's birthday is 4 weeks away. Don't let me down. Hellfire, head of the Phoenix Clan.
The first thing I did before deliberating on the letters was go to the gremlin and send Eric 10,000 gold and the gloves that dropped in the dungeon. That's it. I just sent and forgot about them. They were becoming a tempting annoyance in my bag. I also wrote him that I was all right and would be heading out to Anhur's in 2 months' time, though it might take me about a week to get there. After this, I sat down in the personal room and finally let it hit me. My hands were shaking, and not a single sensible thought entered my head except for, what to do? Very soon, an epic plan ripened in my mind. Cornick came to Farstead. If he was here, he could explain to me why my feelings seemed to be glitching. Why is my head pointing me towards Phoenix, but my heart away from it? Once that decision had been reached, it was much easier to start doing things, and I started to put everything away into my bag. 100 scrolls of Wall of Flame dealing 1,000 points of damage, and the pile of lapis lazuli from Hellfire. Then there was only the 2-way communication amulet left. I looked at it despondently, but still put it around my neck. The deal with it was simple enough. Either I take it and use it, or I return it, together with all the items. After one good look at those, I was entirely disinclined to return them, at least for now. I really didn't want to feel like a complete sellout, so after giving it a good think, I wrote a reply. Good day, Anastaria. Thanks a bunch for the items and the scrolls. As soon as I outgrow them, I will repair them and return them to you as good as new. As you correctly pointed out, I understand full well what such a set can cost. Perhaps for you this is not so much, but for me it's simply enormous. Even if I do join Phoenix, I do not wish to be in the position of a poor relation who gets clothed from the Lord's charity. I am not used to being a dead weight. Shaman Mayen. I read over the letter one last time. I didn't appear to make any promises, but didn't agree to anything either. Until I sort out the mess inside me, I'll keep making such excuses. I sent the reply and was hit by a crazy thought. I started a new letter. Hello, Hellfire. I got the lapis and will try to work it. Here's the thing. I told Anastaria about the number 2s that I ran across in the Krong province. One of them I recognized as Plinto on account of his phoenix. I have a request. Can you send me the nicks and appearance holograms of the top 20 players from Phoenix and the number twos? It would be useful to know who to trust and who to avoid at all costs. If Hellfire replied, I would know exactly what to do with his chess request for Anastaria. He wants the dwarves, eh? Well, bite me.
Dearie, can you help out a weak and helpless woman?
Patricia was still standing in the door of her house, stretching an envelope towards players running past. Some players stopped, their gaze growing cloudy as they looked up the quest in the manual, and were off again a few minutes later. No one wanted to get involved in a socializer quest. "Greetings to you, dear lady." I came up to the old woman and bowed. "I've finished your assignment, and now possess the treasure of Swiftbell, your brother. I have a few questions for you. Would you mind answering them?"
"Well, dearie, you do some work for me first, and ask them questions after."
Patricia's abrupt reply completely threw me.
"Shouting it all out loud, brother, Swiftbell, treasure. You're walking around like some Red Riding Hood who just brought pies to Grandma. I won't be telling you anything. And don't even think about carrying me to Mabel like last time. Practically all the neighbors were laughing at me after that. No, no, I won't tolerate such an outrage a second time. I'll summon the gods right away."
And there you have it. I happen to have a quest connected to you, Granny, and you've decided to get all stubborn. I looked at my attractiveness with Patricia in the settings. 1. At least it was 2 last time. Stop. Last time I completed a quest, that's why attractiveness went up. And later I made that tea for the old ladies. Then let me deliver that letter for you. It's on my way, anyhow.
Right you are, too. I've not sent the letter yet. Everyone wants to get enriched at the expense of the old and frail.
Patricia was back to her old tune about the unfair life of an NPC in Barleona, but I was only half listening. If I wasn't mistaken, in the next few hours my feet were going to get pretty worn out. I was right. My attractiveness with Mabel was also set at 1. After reading me a lecture on how people shouldn't quarrel, must look after the young and respect the old, she handed me the reply. I returned to Patricia and discovered that my attractiveness rose to 2. So I kept walking between the old ladies, having to listen not only to their lectures, but to what other players thought of me. "Such a dolt! It's a flippin' socializer! Ditch it!"
"Let's go to an instance. Nothing to catch here."
"Dude, what the heck are you doing? Trying to find out who gets tired first, you or the old bags?"
Well, well. Players rushing around Farstead weren't exactly tolerant. They had to watch a touched-in-the-head shaman running between old lady NPCs, delivering a letter, getting a new one, and going straight back. What a moron, right? During my 40th round, the old ladies started to repeat themselves. That is, they once again started to say that everyone tries to enrich themselves at the expense of the old and frail. Finally, the moment had arrived. I may have lost 5 hours outside Beatwick, but on another return to Patricia, I knew that I would get...
"Attractiveness with Patricia, 100.
"I bet you've got quite worn out by now, sonny," said the old lady in a completely different tone as soon as I gave her Mabel's reply. "You've been running between us half the day, almost, probably done 20 miles by now. We've even run out of ideas for what to write. Had to send empty letters and all. But you kept delivering them without even looking inside. Take me to Mabel. We need to have a chat.
Finally. I carefully gripped Patricia and delivered her to Mabel like some precious cargo. Precious indeed. My totem depended on it.
Eh, Patricia, you've always had a weak spot for stubborn fools.
Mabel stood by the house, watching her sister being transported.
This just isn't fair. Why did he come to you and not me? Maybe I want a ride as well. Mabel, if you're so envious, there's no need to shout about it.
Patricia gestured me where to put her down. Dear ladies, I've come here on business. I unburdened myself of the pleased-looking old lady and decided to cut to the chase.
So fidgety, this one, said Mabel, throwing up her arms. Always hurrying somewhere. You think we should have tested him a bit longer? No, sister dear, we've given him quite a run-around as it is. He didn't even breathe a word of complaint, and you're calling him fidgety. What is it that you came for, then? No, no, no,
Mabel interrupted again before I could open my mouth.
What are we, some wandering tramps to be loitering by the threshold? Come on in. We'll have a proper chat inside.
Mabel's house was just the same, still as white and full of light as it was last time.
Do make us some tea, Mabel. Mayen makes great tea, but it gives you a whopping headache afterwards. We better do it ourselves this time.
Patricia, as rules of hospitality dictated, settled into an armchair and started to order her sister about.
Right you are. How can we chat without a cup of tea first?
The hostess started to fret and headed off to the kitchen.
So, tell us how you managed to vanquish the woodwove.
Tea taken care of, the old ladies now gave me their full attention. I considered denying there was any wove there to speak of, but thought better of it. Getting on the bad side of the old ladies wasn't worth the risk. I briefly described my adventures, not forgetting to mention the dragon.
So, it looks like Aranoxetolycus got dragged into this after all,
Mabel said thoughtfully.
I would have never thought that you had a dragon for a totem. Can you show him?
I can't. I'm not a real shaman yet. I haven't completed the necessary training, so I can't summon Draco for a couple more days. And how did Swiftbell meet Aranoxetolycus? That's some tongue-twister of a name.
Just call him Dragon. Brother found out where they live from an ancient scroll, and then did what you did. He just went and paid them a visit, the fidget. There he made friends with Aranoxetolycus, and they spent the next 20 years together.
And where is this scroll now? I was trying not to breathe in case I put off the old ladies.
I will make my own way back.
Patricia got up and adjusted her dress, leaving my question unanswered.
Thanks for freeing the wove, Mayen. Our brother did wrong when he put it to guard the treasure. It was languishing and lonely there. As for the scroll, finding the way to it is not easy. Not easy at all. But we've told you what it is already. Whether you heard us or not, that's your business. Go now, and don't visit us again. We'll pretend we don't know you, and won't give you any more assignments.
I was about to object when an invisible force gripped me and shoved me out of the house. The loud bang of the closing door was accompanied by the message, "Update of the searching for your totem quest. Swift Bell found an ancient scroll which describes the path into the land of dragons. Where the scroll is right now is a mystery that you must solve. The merchant sisters gave you the necessary clues. If you fail to discover them, speak to the shaman trainer." I looked angrily at the door that concealed the old ladies. What clues did they just give me, exactly? I went over the entire conversation in my head and didn't discover a single lead. But approaching a shaman trainer would come as the very last resort, when I admit that I was unable to find the totem myself. Missing out on a pet that might have rare stats and abilities was out of the question. It's a standard thing in Barleona. If you do something yourself, you'll get a big slice of the pie. If you ask for help, you'll only get a biscuit. Tasty, but small. And it's the big pie I'm after.
"Where on earth have you been?"
If I was now looking at Almus's full-time maid, he definitely had a preference for plump ladies.
"Mr. Almus and his guest have been expecting you for a good while now. They've already had their third cup of tea, and still there was no sign of you. Disgraceful."
"Catherine, bring him right through to the sitting room. And no need to grumble. Shamans are not late. They always come at the time they consider appropriate,"
came the voice of the former trainer, and the maid immediately fell silent. Flashing her eyes and making it clear that she will be watching me very closely, she took me to the room where two men were waiting for me. Or, rather, one man and a sentient who was completely wrapped up in a gray cloak. Judging by his height, it was either a gnome or a dwarf who had been very ill for a long time.
"Cornick?"
"We have no time for idle chatter,"
a deeply elderly voice came from under the hood.
"Almus, you know what you have to do. Warn the others."
"Yes, teacher, I understand."
"As for you, young apprentice, we have to get going. Great change is coming to Barleona, and you have to be ready for it."
Cornick took me by the hand, and immediately Almus's place vanished, as did all of Farstead. Stunned, I gazed at the great mountains propping up the sky. The golden glow that surrounded Cornick and myself kept out the snow, which was racing around us in a blizzard. Was Cornick really a harbinger? I opened up the map to see the description of the province where we ended up. Yeah, we were right on the fringe of the Freelands, not far from the ocean that separated Barleona's continents. The map helpfully showed me fog in all available scales, with just a contour of the border between the land and the ocean. I didn't have this region on my map. Never mind, I would pencil it in the evening, though I had no idea how this could be of use to me other than leveling up in cartography. Not only was it the very edge of the world, it was also very hard to get to. Cartus was lying right between us and the Malabar Empire. Cornick loudly breathed in the frosty air, which was allowed through by the aura, pulled back his hood, and looked at me with the enormous, once brown but now faded, eyes of an elderly goblin.
"I had no time to wait for you in Annhers. Terrible events are coming, and we must prepare for them. First, you need to get your totem. Now we will pay the dragons a visit. There you will swear an oath of allegiance to the High Lord. Then...
I'm sorry, teacher, but I must get the totem by myself. When on earth did I get this impudent? Thank you for your offer of help to speed up the process, but I must find my own way to the High Lord.
If I understood correctly, that was the title of the Head of Dragons.
For a few moments, Cornick drilled me with a penetrating stare.
All right. If you can provide a good reason why you must find the dragons on your own without my help, I will agree. But your reason must be indisputable.
I cannot give you a reason. This is something within me. I feel that this is the way I must do things, and if I accept your help, it would mean a greatly inferior result. I decided not to beat around the bush and tell Cornick the whole truth, as ridiculous as it might be. Even if he's an NPC, he's a clever NPC with access to the information that I need. If I don't get help with sorting out my feelings, one day I'll go mad from the inner contradictions between logic and emotions. This isn't easy for someone who'd been guided by his head his entire life. And a pretty shabby head at that, I thought, remembering how I ended up in prison.
That is the most cast-iron reason that a shaman can give.
There was now a hint of satisfaction in Cornick's voice.
It looks like our training process will be considerably speeded up if you're able to follow your instincts. So let's not waste any time. Have a seat.
Leading by example, Cornick sat down right there on the snow.
To begin with, tell me what you know about shamans.
Is this another Prontho? The orc also asked me this question before sending me off to the trial. I gave a pretty stupid answer at the time and was reluctant to make a fool of myself again. I opened the manual page on shamans to refresh my memory about the steps and was about to gladly recount them to Cornick when another bout of inner contradiction stopped me in my tracks. This isn't what the goblin wants to hear now. He is clearly asking about something else. What do I know about shamans? I closed my eyes and tried to listen to my feelings, and then said slowly, Shamans. Shamans speak to spirits. A shaman's spirit must be firm, steadfast, gentle, and pliant. My eyes closed, and completely immersed in my inner world, I even stopped noticing the biting wind. These words were said by Prontho and the great air spirit, so I must be able to say them too.
All this is true, apprentice, but these are someone else's words.
Cornick's voice reached me through the web of my thoughts.
Don't use someone else's words. Find your own.
Ants in the pants's post popped up in my head. Thinking is for mages. Shamans feel. And that's when a light bulb lit up inside my head. I knew the answer I had to give Cornick. You can't describe what a shaman is. How can you describe the wind, the rainbow, or pain? You can only feel it. Someone who doesn't accept the shaman's essence would never understand what a shaman is, while anyone who had attained this understanding wouldn't be able to find the words to describe this to the others. For me, being a shaman means to be guided by my feelings. For Prontho, it's the sense of duty, and for you, teacher, It's probably something else. For each of us, being a shaman is finding our own path and following it to the very end. What do I know about shamans? Nothing. And at the same time, everything. I don't know the shaman I would turn into after my training. I would have to get to know him all over again, and I still have questions for myself as I am now. But I know one thing. If you're a shaman, you are unique. I'm speaking of real shamans here, not just those who manage to get a totem but lack the ability to gain the title of a great shaman. Character class update. Class Initiate Shaman has been replaced by Elemental Shaman. Seek your trainer for learning to work with elemental spirits. Attention, you have earned the rank of Elemental Shaman without obtaining your totem. If you are unable to obtain your totem in the next 2 months, your rank would be brought down to Initiate Shaman.
The Supreme Spirit was right. He does have a chance, muttered Cornick.
For some moments there was a silence, disturbed only by the howling of the wind.
I have to teach you many things, my apprentice,
continued the goblin a short while later, when I came to myself and opened my eyes. Sitting down in a lotus pose, I prepared myself to listen to the harbinger. I still had about 30 hours until I had to be back in Beatwick, so there was plenty of time left for training.
We'll start with the summoning of the spirits. Right now you are an elemental shaman who doesn't have a totem of his own, but who can still summon elemental spirits. In total, there are 4 types of spirits: fire, water, air, and earth. In turn, each type of spirit comes in 4 classes: mass and individual damage, and the same for healing. Yes, don't be surprised. Even fire spirits have the ability to heal.
Right, I see. I will now have access to 16 spirits, but will be able to add only 8 summonings to the active zone. So something will have to be sacrificed. This isn't much of a worry at the beginner levels, but starting from level 100, I would have to build my active zone according to the opponent. It is foolish to summon a fire spirit on a salamander or an air spirit on an air elemental.
Each type of spirit, Cornick continued, accessible to you, has its rank. The more often you use a certain type of spirit, the stronger spirits of this type become. You have to choose the direction in which to develop, because you can strengthen only 1 type out of 4. The strengthening would apply to all the spirits you can currently summon or would be able to summon later, from younger to the supreme.
This is clear enough, too. This marks the start of the work needed to level up a skill. You have to choose 1 school, or how the shamans call them, type, and work with the spirits of this type. The more often you summon, the stronger the summoned spirit becomes. It's a pity that I bypassed working with the younger spirits, or I would already have a specialization.
You have to understand that spirit summoning is not free. You have to give them something in return, either some of your life or a gift. Simple spirits require bread. Don't forget that if you want to reduce the amount of life you give to the spirits, you have to perform a sacrifice once a week. The sacrifice is made on an altar which each shaman possesses. You will receive yours later.
Something else that was bothering me has been laid to rest now. From the time I became an initiate shaman, I was wondering how to perform a sacrifice. The manuals didn't say a word about that. I once even left tea for the spirits at Elizabeth's house, but it remained where it was. It turns out you needed an altar.
And now for the last thing that you must know about shamans. To remove any doubt that you are an elemental shaman, you must have a cloak. Here.
A piece of cloth decorated with feathers appeared out of nowhere in Cornick's hands. I carefully took the item and unfolded it, trying not to damage the feathers. Will I really have to wear this? It's good to be a harbinger, like Cornick. No external attributes or stupid cloaks. I sighed and put on the cloak, looking at its properties. The miner's cloak I had from Pryke should have been replaced long ago, and since Anastaria didn't send me one, I'll use what I've been given.
Cornick's Shaman Cloak. Durability, unbreakable. Description, increases the rank of the summoned spirit by 2. The penalty for summoning all spirits is decreased by 10%. Plus 15 to intellect, plus 5 to stamina. Item class, rare, only usable by shamans. Level restrictions, 20 plus.
Now the time has come to teach you. Henceforth, you are an elemental shaman.
Cornick lifted his hands, shouted something, and snow, which still didn't penetrate the sphere, began to swirl around me, and a series of messages began to flash before my eyes.
You have learned how to summon the air spirit of healing. Spirit type, air. Description, you appeal to the world of spirits, summoning a spirit which gives part of its essence to the injured person. The strength of the summoned spirit and the amount of the essence given is determined by intellect and spirit rank. Kamlani time, 2 seconds. Cost of summoning, character level 2 summoner's hit points. Cost of healing, character level 4 mana. Restores intellect 3 hit points. Cannot heal earth entities, dwarves, kobolds, gnomes. Bestows additional healing on air entities, air elementals. You have learned how to summon the spirit of air strike. Spirit type, air. Description, you appeal to the world of spirits, summoning the spirit on your opponent to take part of his life force with it. The strength of the summoned spirit and the amount of life force taken from the opponent is determined by intellect and spirit rank. Kamlani time, 5 seconds. Cost of summoning, character level 2 hit points of the summoner. Cost of attack, character level 4 mana. Damage, intellect 3 points. Range, 40 meters. Cannot attack air entities, air elementals. Deals additional damage to earth entities, dwarves, kobolds, gnomes.
The spirits of the air healing wave and air wall provided AoE healing and damage. Quite good, but in each of the learned summonings, both damage and healing were 3 times less powerful than with a single target. This provided an advantage only if there were more than 3 opponents or injured parties. Otherwise, you had to work with each target separately. I learned similar summonings for water, fire, and earth. They were practically the same, the only differences being in the names. A few things stuck in my memory right away. You could not heal humans and Thorin with fire spirits, orcs and trolls with water spirits, and elves and pixies with earth spirits. It was the same with damage. Each type had its limitations.
You have to choose the type of spirit that you will be advancing, apprentice.
I heard Cornick's voice after going through the entire list of spells.
A shaman must make his choice at the start and follow it his entire life, no matter how wrong that choice might have been.
Did I hear a note of sadness in Cornick's voice? This made me quite thoughtful. On one hand, the choice seemed obvious. Fire. Damage from all 4 types was the same, but psychologically it's fire that everyone fears. I don't know the visual side of the summoning, but calling a fire spirit should at least send some sparks flying. One thing that stopped me was you couldn't use it to heal humans. Leveling up a spirit type that doesn't grant you the ability to heal yourself is pretty stupid. Which should it be, then? Earth, air, or water? Should I toss a coin, perhaps?
Did you make your choice?
Kornick hurried me. So impatient. I'm having a think here, and he's distracting me. Yes, teacher, water. I choose the water type.
Explain your choice.
I could refer to my feelings again, but this time I was guided by simple calculation. Fire and air are immediately ruled out because I, as well as my friends, are humans, gnomes, and dwarves. If I can't summon strengthened spirits on us, what do I need them for? Then we have water and earth left. I thought of choosing earth, but saw that it comes with a limitation for elves. I may not have any elf friends, but I do have a few acquaintances. Then only water remains. I don't know any trolls or orcs, aside from Prontho, who can be healed by an ordinary spirit. When I mentioned Prontho, the goblin's face wrinkled up in a smile.
Yes, that stubborn fool can be healed by simple bandages, all right. He'd survive anything. So be it, then. From now on, and henceforth, your personal type of spirit is water.
Personal spirit type determined. Water. Water spirit summoning rank 1.
I added the fire and water spells to the active zone, filling up all the available slots. Now I could face anything.
Teacher, since we've mentioned Prontho, I would like to know what happened on that ill-fated day when he challenged Shyam. And where is Garanika now? And the most important question, what is going on with me? Why do I keep taking one decision with my head, but a different one with my heart? When I let myself be guided by my head, the result is complete nonsense.
Is this all that you wish to know?
Kornick raised an eyebrow questioningly.
Or do you have a couple more questions? Don't hurry. Have a think. What if you missed something?
Man, Kornick seriously reminds me of Almas right now. What is it with NPC shamans? Are they all programmed to answer a question with a question? No, this isn't all. I would also like to know why you flew all the way to Farstead to see me. What threat is Barleona facing? Why the hurry with the training and obtaining the totem? What is it that Almas has to do? This covers it now, I think. Goblin's laughter echoed through the mountains.
According to all the rules, you should have felt embarrassed enough to ask my pardon for your impertinence. Bow your head and await my permission to ask questions. But it seems you haven't heard about these things called rules.
Kornick looked at me shrewdly.
And that is good. Before I answer your questions, I would like you to summon a spirit. We can talk anywhere, but training you without being noticed by Garanika, we can do only here. Heal yourself.
Heal? No problem. There doesn't seem to be anything difficult about that. I selected myself and started to summon a healing spirit. How can this be a test? Just some fooling around, that's all.
Damage taken. Hit points reduced by 2,036. 2,316, fire spirit summoning, minus 280, fire resistance. Total hit points, 384 of 2,420.
The fire spirit did come, with a visual component, and quite an impressive one at that. For a couple of moments I resembled a Bengal light, with sparks flying off me in every direction. At least it didn't hurt. Looks like your own spirits couldn't cause you pain. But what the heck? I wanted to be healed. It took considerable willpower to stop myself from summoning another healing spirit. One was quite enough.
"So festive and pretty," came the sardonic voice of the goblin. "But the result is not quite what you should get from a healing spell, is it? I think you should stop torturing yourself and try using a target."
A practice dummy of the type used by players to perfect sequences of blows or spells appeared a few meters away from me.
"Do continue."
I selected the 30-level dummy and decided to summon an attacking water spirit on it. Even if I was wrong, I would simply heal the dummy. I was wrong.
"Attention! In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%.
The AOE spirits deal 3 times less damage than a single target spirit, but this was more than sufficient. I had too much intellect and too few hit points remaining after my first unsuccessful attempt. The respawn point was located just next to the spot where Kornick took me. The dummy was almost completely covered in snow now, a sign that the blizzard lasted all the 12 hours I was gone.
"I was starting to think you decided to stick around the Grey Lands forever," came the grumbling voice of the old goblin.
I turned around and saw that the teacher was sitting on an inexplicably acquired carpet and sipping a hot drink. Still surrounded by a golden aura, he looked me over with a grin and added,
"I have a proposal for you. I will teach you the right way to use the spirits, but you will be permitted to ask me only one question. If you manage to get to grips with the spirits by yourself, I'll answer all your previous questions. Make your choice."
Who says I must choose anything? I have the manual and the forum. Time to stop acting like a dope and start reading. So, the summoning of spirits. The hour I spent on sifting through the available materials bore no results. The official documentation didn't say a word about how to use the spirits. Or rather, the information was there, but it wasn't what I was looking for. Everyone referred to some sort of a spirit-choosing mode, but made no mention of how to enter it. As far as I could see, wasn't this exactly what was involved in putting the spirits into the active zone? Stop. Where's the spirit selection? Before, when I had just 2 summonings, I didn't bother cluttering my brain with such nonsense. But now the number of available spirits was noticeably increased, so perhaps I should specify the slot of the active zone from which the summoning should take place. Let's try this. I selected the snow-covered dummy and, putting some distance between us, just in case, I mentally selected the spirit and began the summoning. So, what did we have? I didn't sustain any damage, which was great, but the fact that instead of damage the dummy had a healing spirit land on it didn't seem quite right. At least it was a water and not a fire spirit, so it looks like first you have to choose the type of spirit and then the summoning category, damage or healing. Let's try this. I selected the dummy again, chose a water spirit, repeated the spirit selection, and started to summon. Yes!
Water spray flew in all directions from the dummy, almost immediately turning into icicles. It's quite freezing here by the looks of it. Ending up outside the golden sphere was certainly not a good idea. But right now, that was inconsequential. I did it! I managed to figure out the spirit summoning by myself. I looked at the goblin somewhat mockingly and repeated the summons. Dummy, water spirit, summon. The goblin gave a little laugh when the dummy became surrounded by a puddle of water, where bodiless spirits were dashing around, periodically causing damage. That's right. These were water spirits, but the AOE version. So my method wasn't working. I had further thinking to do. After a couple of hours of experiments, it sunk in that I wasn't going to learn how to summon the needed spirit by myself. Didn't have the brains for it.
"You're not here to tell me you've given up already?" asked Cornick slyly.
"I need a hint. At least tell me the direction in which I should be working," I mumbled sheepishly.
"In that case, you'll get only two questions. Agreed?"
"Agreed." Two is more than one, in any case, and I couldn't figure out what the problem was by myself. Neither my head nor my intuition seemed of any use. Moreover, even the old familiar spirits of lightning and healing would no longer be summoned on demand. Something was refusing to work in my shamanistic magic since I jumped to being an elemental shaman.
"Then here's a hint for you. You were right when you were working on who it was you were summoning. Now think how you go about doing it."
"How do I summon?" "I take the tambourine, hit it with the mallet, accompanied by the shaman has three hands, and that's it. The spirit is summoned." But then shamans that I had seen in the past arose before my eyes. They kept hitting the tambourine and constantly singing something. Could that be it? Do I have to stay continuously in a state of summoning? The shaman has three hands, and behind his back a wing. From the heat upon his breath, shining candle fire springs. Yeah, 10 seconds. And the world changed. Or rather, it was my game interface that changed. Almost a quarter of my field of vision was covered by 8 transparent spirits. They were constantly turning, as if showing themselves off from every side. 4 spirits had a counter under them, probably the rank of the spirit. A rather sheepish-looking 1 was shimmering there right now. My water spirits were still weak, very weak. I stopped my summoning to examine the updated interface. 10 seconds went by, and the interface with the spirits vanished. So that's what the mode for working with the spirits is like, eh? I selected a dummy, called up the mode once again, and then focused on one of the water spirits and unleashed it at the target. Bam! The dummy shook and water sprayed in all directions, clearing the snow in its wake. I repeated the spirit summons, and the dummy played the role of a fountain once again. Did I finally get it? I spent around 10 minutes playing around with spirit summoning, healing myself, the dummy, even Cornick, who, disgruntled, mumbled something like,
"So big, but no brains at all."
When I stopped the Kamlani, I exited the mode for working with spirits. On one hand, this was convenient. I had the needed spirits always before me in plain sight, and their summoning speed increased with this convenient interface. At the same time, it looks like the class is unpopular, exactly due to this aspect of shamanistic abilities. In the time it takes you to enter the right mode and summon a spirit, you can be outmaneuvered 100 times and sent off to respawn at a leisurely pace.
You've earned 2 questions. Think carefully before asking them.
Cornig's voice brought me back to reality. My questions are the same. I still want to know what happened on that ill-fated day when Prontho dueled with Shyam, and why I make different decisions with my heart and with my head. And before Cornick could open his mouth, I added, "But I have a massive request for you. I would like to get a full answer, and not something like, 'There was a duel, and you can feel the right way.' I know this anyway. Teacher, if we have so little time, please leave the riddles for later and answer the question directly. After Beatwick, I will come to Annhurst. Drop by for a visit, and we'll play riddles all you like. We really don't have time for that at the moment. Your reputation with the Shaman Council has increased by 10 points. You are 990 points away from the status of friendly."
"Heh." The goblin smirked. "I really did intend to give you an answer like that, word for word. I'll have to think of a different answer now."
"And how about simply giving a proper full answer?"
"But giving you a straight answer just isn't interesting. Not flying to the dragons and finding the scroll by yourself was your own choice. And don't look at me with such surprise. Do you really think Almas and I weren't watching you when you were running between the honorable ladies? I can give you a full answer to one question, and a vague answer to the other. Choose which is most important to you."
"Then tell me about Prontho. I'll sort out my own problems, but I mustn't lose the thread of the events of many years ago. This is more important."
"You've made your choice. Then listen, apprentice, about what is happening to you. You are a shaman. What makes shamans different is that they can feel certain things within the surrounding world. For example, a shaman always knows if anyone is staring at him or feels if there's a fight or an ambush nearby. These are only the external manifestations of what the spirits are able to tell them. But sometimes unusual shamans appear. These are not only able to feel external phenomena, but internal ones as well. Some call it intuition, others premonition, but the essence of it remains the same. It is the ability to foresee the future. Such sentience exists among mages, warriors, hunters, and shamans. Within each class there can appear a free citizen who doesn't just perceive, but also senses. Why you're able to do this is a question for you. I don't know who you were in your previous life. I hope that you would be able to understand this by yourself."
Cornick paused, giving me a chance to think over his words. It turns out that the ability to feel is not specific to shamans, but to certain players. Players with the ability to be prescient. People who use their intuition in the real world. I suddenly recalled the time when I was a free artist in Barleona. I was about 20 when I started studying hacking and information security. What else can a former student of the Philological Department for Ancient Languages do? There were no prospects for development
and there wasn't much of a career in being an ancient culture enthusiast. So I chose computer security. This was followed by 2 years of stubborn and monotonous reading of books, attending training courses, sitting tests, and meeting up with similarly crazy people as myself, until one day the corporation announced a contest for hacking Barleona. At the time, the game still didn't have that many players, despite active propaganda by the government. There were plenty of virtual worlds around, some of them of even superior quality. Players had choice. And then the contest was announced. Whoever managed to gain possession of another player's account would be given a reward of 30,000 gold, which at the time already corresponded to real money. The contest lasted 2 weeks, without any limit placed on the number of winners. Barleona descended into chaos. Hackers from around the world got down to business, and for about a week, Barleona was inaccessible. Servers were down, accounts were hacked, and characters deleted. There were howls of rage from players on the forums. Thousands of cases were filed with the courts. But the corporation steadily weathered all these woes. A certain policy had been adopted and followed through, whatever the immediate results. The chaos lasted a week and then suddenly stopped. Completely stopped. The injured parties were compensated and given commemorative gifts, and everything seemed to settle down until another contest was announced 6 months later. It had the same purpose as the first. Anyone able to break into the game and gain access to another player's information would be given a reward. A much bigger sum this time. 1,000,000 gold. Barleona held out for a week until our three strong strike force joined the fray. Yes, there were three of us. Me, my friend, the one who developed the security system used by Marina for her imitator, and our mentor, the one who taught us everything we knew.
"A real hacker doesn't just know his stuff better than anyone," he liked to repeat. "A real hacker has intuition. If you can't sense that you need to click in this particular place right now and then go and launch a script in that particular location, you will never be able to call yourself a hacker. You may be an advanced programmer, a security expert, or even a break-in guru, but you will never be a hacker." We spent 3 days trying to break into Barleona. The updated imitator completely blocked all our attempts to get through the defense. 2 days before the end of the contest, we gathered as usual at my friend's place and planned our next move. Everyone was out of ideas, and we were close to giving up. That's when it all happened. I stared vacantly at the stream of data coming from my capsule and, comparing it with an analogous data stream of another player, I began to randomly change the parameters of the intercepting device that we inserted between the capsule and the game server. Even now, 7 years later, I would not be able to explain what it was that I did. I was typing something in, making some changes. At that moment, it felt like the right thing to do. My friend wanted to speak to me, but my teacher stopped him, saying that I shouldn't be distracted. 20 hours later, tired and hungry, I slumped down on the floor and fell asleep. I did it. I managed to program a model of another player's data in my own capsule. The result was far from ideal, since replicating this action required a precisely configured capsule table of the target player, but it didn't matter. What did was that I managed to enter Barleona as another player's character. When I woke up, only my friend remained in the flat. Our teacher left us in a hurry, having volunteered to inform the world that the desired result had been reached. It turned out that he left us for good. When the corporation examined my method, which our now former
mentor claimed as a brainchild of his own, it immediately offered him a job. The promised prize was paid out and the contest ended. Gaming capsules were upgraded within a month, with the corporation providing a free replacement so the break-in couldn't be replicated.